You know, it's funny. As much as I do this, I always have this preconceived idea about how a drunk's supposed to look. And you ain't it. I just, the prettiest bunch of people I ever saw in my life. And I just, you're supposed to be all gnarly looking and all screwed up, and you're not. It's just amazing. I had dinner tonight with three good-looking women, and you know, a couple years ago, we were in Denmark with my evil twin, Chris. Some of you guys have met him or heard of him. And these guys kept saying, "I can't believe how weird you guys talk from Texas." And I was thinking when we were having dinner with this girl, I was going, "God, if these guys could hear some of these Cajun buddies I've met in here, I'm telling you, they're just like, oh my gosh, God." For guys I haven't met, my name is Myers Raymer, and I am an alcoholic. And I am so delighted to be here, and I can't tell you what a fun deal it is to be in a room of like-minded people. Bunch of warm and toasty drunks. It's the coolest. I want to thank Dennis and Lori for schlepping me from the airport and doing all that stuff. What an unbelievable amount of work. For you guys that have never done a conference or that have never sponsored or put on a conference, it's an amazing amount of work. And some of these guys, it's sort of a thankless sort of deal. You do it and you work your butt off for a year. It takes a long time to put them together. They don't just fall into place. And so for Lori and Bob and those guys that busted their rear, my new friend Roberto, what an artist. A little whacked out, but what an artist. This is good. See, it only took me a couple of minutes to figure all this out. I know. I love you, man. I'll tell you. It is a treat to be here. I tell you, if it's okay with you guys, I'm going to shed this real fast. No, you wouldn't want to go any farther, honestly. Looks pretty good in a white shirt, but you can put a white shirt on a pig and it looks okay. I mean, it just... Yeah. I wish... my home group is the primary purpose group in Dallas, Texas, and some of you guys have been on our website, and I've talked, conversed back and forth with some of you cats, and it's always a treat to get to meet somebody in person that we've been corresponding with back and forth. There are primary purpose groups everywhere, but our group started 18 years ago with the sole purpose of studying a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and that's it. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's 120 groups and close to 2,000 meetings a week. There's plenty of other meetings to go to, but all we do is study the book. And in the beginning, there was lots of detractors and people said we were nuts, but here we are 18 years later with 170 or 180 people sitting in a meeting, and it's an amazing thing to see. And for you guys that have corresponded with us, thank you. I appreciate that very much. And we want to stay as plugged in and as in touch with as many of you as we can. I'm a third-generation drunk. I know that'll fool you when you see how I cleaned up, but my dad... My grandfather was drunk, my dad's drunk, and I have an identical twin brother, the infamous evil twin, Chris. And you'd think with all these drunks in front of me that I'd see it all and I'd say, I'm not going there. But you know how it is, man. We just frog off into it, and before too long, we're right in the middle of it. And that's exactly what happened in the deal. I won't bore you with a lot of stuff, a lot of drunk stuff. I wish I had this story with a bunch of living on the street and eating out of dumpsters and a bunch of this other weird stuff. And, you know, I got shot 20 times and I love those stories. I love them to death. Guys, I'm a garden variety drunk that lived a pathetic, pathetic life. And that's the extent of it. The only caveat in my story that may be different from yours is that when I got drunk, I got loud. And when I got loud, I got hit. Lots. Lots. Some of you guys do understand this stuff. You do. I forget where I am. It's just that you know how the weird thing is that the longer we drink, the scarier we get, and the more anxiety and emotional stuff that we carry, and it always comes out sideways. It always comes out in all kinds of weird ways. And with me, it always came out in this kind of. You know, I drink some beers and I get this bravado and I want to get real loud, and God forbid if your date should be in the room, because somewhere in there I have to put my hand on her. Just being friendly, you know. You know the type. It's so obnoxious. And so I was getting hit around a lot, and I the last year that I drank, I got beat up in a pizza place for trying to kill a guy. I don't remember all the details. I just remember I was beating this kid to death, and they in turn started to beat me to death with a beer pitcher. And the whole time, my 3-year-old daughter is watching. She's right there. So you can see how this whole thing is. You see, my wife is my business partner. God love her. And she would be at work all day. And then in the evening, I'm supposed to go home early because I can't work anymore. And I'm going to go home early and cook. We have this little bindery in Louisville. And so I'm raising this daughter. And I'm drunk. And Chris, the evil twin, is living with us at the time. And he's drunk. And so we've got two active alcoholics in this house with this little girl and my wife who's trying to hold our business together. And you can imagine how bizarre the Raymer household was for a number of years. It was absolutely a cesspool of just stupid alcoholism. And so it finally gets bad enough for Chris that Chris finally has some blackouts. There's a guy that works with us at the bindery, and he 12-steps Chris and takes him to an AA meeting. Chris falls in love with AA right off the bat, goes and does his deal. And for 2 months between November and January when I sobered up, I made Chris's life hell. I made fun of him. Where's your big book, Chris? And I'm just, you know how it is. I'm just... He's my buddy. He's my best drinking buddy. I mean, and he stops. I mean, Chris was my guy. Every one of you in here has got a guy just like Chris.
If I get bad, is that some bitch? I'm quitting.
You see? Well, Chris was my guy, and he did quit. And I'm just kind of going, oh my gosh, what am I going to... And I'm watching him come to work and do his deal and go home and get some sleep and come back real early the next morning and do his deal again. And he's going to his meetings and he's doing what he's supposed to do. And I'm just blown away by what I'm seeing. Not one time in those 2 months did Chris ever say, hey, bud, why don't you come with me? Or you need this. Not one time. This is a program of attraction rather than promotion. And Chris attracted me like a magnet that was this big. I just went... Holy cow. He's the light and I'm the moth. And I sucked right up next to him. And he took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was the coolest thing I'd ever experienced in my life. Guys, from the moment I stepped into that smoke-filled room, and it was smoke-filled, I was in love. Absolutely in love. That room was as... Some of you guys have heard me talk about that. That room was as far as from my fist here to that wall, no wider, and about half the length of this room. It was just like a long shotgun thing with one row of tables right down the middle and chairs all the way around. And everybody starts smoking about 6 o'clock. Meeting starts at 6:30. And by halfway through the meeting, you could not stand up without getting... I mean, you just get dizzy. Everybody that got up walked like this. Like this. And you walk to the bathroom, and you go to the bathroom, and you come back in. As soon as you get the thing, you go, get down underneath the smoke again and go back in the deal. No windows, no doors, except the one you came in on. It was awesome. But it was great. It was great. And I fell in love with AA like you wouldn't believe. Now, I got to tell you, we did great for a while. A couple years into the gig, I still don't have a sponsor, and I'm not working any steps. And you can kind of guess what's happening, right? You know, things are getting kind of goofy. Now, by now, Chris has met this little girl down in the hill country and gotten married, and he's moved. He's gone. He got him a big book sponsor down there, and he's doing all the good. And I'm staying right there where I sobered up. There's no reason to leave, you see. My concept of AA, my whole picture of AA is what you spoon-fed me in a meeting. I'm not reading it on my own. I don't really know what's there. I'm just, you know... That room was full of the loveliest, kindest people I've ever met on the face of God's green earth. But collectively, there wasn't a great deal of sobriety there, and there wasn't a great deal of knowledge about what was in the big book, which was a scary thing. I would learn after the fact. I would learn this. Now, hold your finger on this thought, okay? I got to make sure that you guys understand something real quick. One, if you don't know me yet, you'll know. I'm going to tell you right now. There is nothing on God's green earth that I love more than Alcoholics Anonymous. I absolutely love AA and love the people in it. I absolutely do. This is my deal, not your deal. And your deal may have been completely different. I'm not judging AA as a whole in any form or fashion. I'm just telling you what my experience has been in 18 years of being in the deal. And some of it was fun. Some of it wasn't so fun. My deal got real goofy because the sickest I ever was 7 years sober. You see? The weird part about this stuff is that people talk about wanting to kill themselves in their drunkenness and all this other kind of stuff. You know, guys, all of these years that I drank, I never, ever thought about killing myself. It never even crossed my mind. As a functioning alcoholic, I'm going to do the best I can, but it never I never even considered it. 7 years sober, it's the only thing I can think about. Only thing I can think about. I'm still trying to treat this internal condition with the external stuff of my life. My job, the girl, the car, I'm trying to get all this stuff maneuvered, and it's just not working too well. Somewhere along the line, about 5, maybe 6 years into this gig, I'm sitting in these discussion meetings. We've got 21 meetings a week, and they're all open discussion meetings. And I'm so tired of hearing what you have to say about your inability to find a job and Sally's inability to have a relationship and this other kind of stuff. And it's just getting grindy. It's just not. And I don't know anything else. Nobody's doing any step work to speak of. Nobody's doing anything much except just, I don't know, you get the picture. Well, some guys came in from out of town and they had started in the deal. And they said, I remember the group conscience meeting like it was yesterday. And they said, look, I think what we're doing is we're talking about God too much. And so what we're going to do is, why don't we just not talk about God in the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And because I think we're scaring the newcomer away. And what do y'all think about that? And I remember sitting there in the meeting. And I waited until the hands started going up on the vote. And I looked for the majority and I went, we probably are talking about God too much, and I just raised my hand. And our group that night voted God out of our AA meeting. All right. Now, You guessed it. You take a meeting that was already a cesspool and take the only hope that we had out of the meeting. God. Boys and girls were slipping and sliding like big dogs. Nobody was staying sober. It was just a disaster. Nobody was picking up chips. We'd have 160, maybe 200 people in that core membership of that group, and we'd have a birthday night, and there wouldn't be anybody picking up chips. I mean, anybody picking up birthdays. Nobody was making it, you see? But you know how it is. We sober up in a place, and we're loyal to that place, and I'd have stayed there till the day I died. I'd have stayed right there, except I finally got sick enough that I almost drank. And it won't go into it, but it scared me so bad. I called Chris, and Chris said, hey, let me hook you up with a guy. I'll be in Dallas in a couple of days. We're going to go to a couple of different meetings, and I'll see if I can find you a big book guy that can help you. I've been telling you for 5 straight years to get out of that group and go find you someplace. Now, why do I mention that? I mention that because I've heard for years that as long as there's a circle and triangle on a door, that God's there and everything is going to be okay. Guys, I'm telling you right now, that may be your experience, but that is not my experience, not in North Texas. Some groups have gotten so incredibly sick that nobody can get sober. In Iceland, they call them dark tunnel meetings. And after you've experienced some of it, you go, and I pray that none of you experience. I pray that none of you ever have to go to that deal where you're so desperate for a solution and the solution simply isn't there because we're too busy in our arrogance and our ego sharing things that don't need to be talked about and ignoring the new guy that's still vibrating from his last drink. We do that, and it's just a nightmare. So anyway, Chris plugs me into this old guy and he says, here, go see this guy. He's expecting you. So I call this guy, I go over to his house, and he opens the door and I go, ooh. I mean, this guy's like 110. He's just... I mean, I'm old. Clifford is old. And I'm looking at him and he's got that kind of stern look on his face and he's just, I'm going, oh, I'm in trouble. And you know how you just intuitively know? And he asked me where my big book is and I said, I don't know. And he said, don't come back over here without it. Here, borrow mine. And we sat down on his couch and he started taking me through the deal. Guys, I'll make the Reader's Digest condensed version of this before you guys melt and slide off on the floor. In about 45 minutes, this guy took me through the work in terms of a Reader's Digest condensed version of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the steps, and it was all brand new. I'm telling you guys, I sat there like this, and I'd go, really? Where is that? And I'd be looking in this thing like this, and I'd be going, and every 3 or 4 sentences, I'd want to jump in there and tell him what I'd learned in my 7 years of AA. And he just kind of rolled his eyes and we plowed through it for about 45 minutes and we go to page 53 and we're talking about the bedevilments in there and you guys have read these things and he's reading it and I'm going, buddy, that's describing me perfectly. And he says, that's untreated alcoholism. And I said, Clifford, I haven't had a drink in 7 years. I've had no outside issues in 7 years. What do you mean? Dying of untreated alcoholism. He said, buddy, you're not treating the internal condition. All you're doing is just showing up in meetings. Well, Clifford, you know meeting makers make it. And Clifford just looked at me and he said, some do. Some do, but not all of them. And I was later to find, as a result of actually looking in this precious book, which is a great, great trip if you haven't done it. It was just an amazing thing for me to go through this thing. So we'd sit in these meetings on Tuesday night and Thursday night. We're studying the big book. We'd go through the thing. And some of you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. You're going through this and all of a sudden it's starting to illuminate. It's starting to really come alive and you're starting to see these things for the very first time. And I'm getting real excited and I'm calling Chris every day after the meeting and I'm going, "Oh, Chris, you know how long it took Bill Wilson to work these steps?" And he'd go, yeah, and we'd talk about it a little bit. And then next meeting, I'd call him afterwards. I'm going, "Chris, you wouldn't believe this stuff." And my life is beginning to change. And it's just an amazing thing to see what a few simple instructions, it's just crazy. I've still got a big old load of arrogance. I want you guys to understand something. There's a lot of guys in here my age. I understand at a great depth what it feels like to be a part of a fellowship for a whole bunch of years. There seems to be two bunches of us that are older. There seems to be the bunch that says, "Screw it, I'm done with it," and they go someplace else. And there seems to be the others that say, "I'll make the best of it and stay." And then there seems to be some that were kind of like I am, that want to hold on to every piece of information I was spoon-fed in AA, even though it's not AA. I don't know anything else. And I'm sober for a bit of time and I'm thinking, "God dang, if this isn't the real thing, I don't know what I'm going to do." So here I am with this weirdness going on inside of me. Half of me knows right here on a gut level that the stuff that they're teaching me in this meeting is real and a message of depth and weight. I know it. And there's another half of me that is fighting it tooth and nail. I don't want to know anything different than what I already know. I don't want to start over. I don't want to admit that I don't understand what's in this book. I don't want to. Because it takes a great deal of courage to do that. And I didn't have it. And I just wanted you to fix it so I could go on and do my deal. That's all I really wanted. I didn't want to do all this other stuff. So we're sitting in these meetings and somebody would ask a question and I'd go, oh, I'm like Horseshack jumping up and down going, "Pick me, I want to." And every time they'd call on, some of you guys are too young for even Horseshack, Jesus. They'd call on me and I'd go, okay. And I'd start sharing some middle of the road crap that I'd picked up in some lame discussion meeting, some chicken shit one-liner or some deal like this. And everybody in the room, now these are all big book guys. There's no middle-of-the-road guys in there. These are 50 or 60 guys and they're looking at me, and women, and they're looking at me. And you can just see, it's like the air is pulled out of the room. You can just see them slide back in their chair like this, like, "Oh no, not again." You know? And I'm looking around thinking like this. So one night, somebody made the mistake of calling on me again. And they call on me, and I share something, and I'm thinking, this is the best, because it was the piece of great wisdom that I'd been holding back. I'm suicidal. I'm writing hot checks all over Denton County. I can't keep my hands off other women. My life is absolutely a nightmare, and yet I still want you to have what I have. I'm still wanting to tear it. It's a bad thing, guys. Honest, this is a bad thing. So as I get finished sharing like this, I sit back there like this, and I remember sitting back there like this, getting kind of a pant pulled up, and Clifford, this old dude, walks towards me, and as he's walking towards me, he's looking me right in the eye like this, and he just sets this note down in front of me, and he just keeps walking. And I go, "Yeah, he likes what I had to say," like this. And I remember opening that note, and in big red letters across it, it said, "Why don't you shut up until you know what's in the book?" See, Clifford had had a crawlful of my arrogance and my ego thinking that I knew what I was doing. He'd had a crawlful of it. He already loved me enough to tell me the absolute truth. And guys, that's what we have to do sometime in this deal, because we've got a bunch of little arrogant pissants that want to say whatever pops into their head. Somebody told me one time, I got a Grand Central Station head, and every time a train comes in, I got to get on it. And that's the way my thought process works. You see? I got to say this weird stuff and all of a sudden, I don't ever think about what I'm saying. I just say it. I was so mad. I remember getting up and I just marched to the door, and it was a big room, not quite this big. And as I got to the door, there was a guy named Philip File, and I'll bust his anonymity every chance I get. I love the guy to death. And And Philip stopped me right at the door and said, don't go. I said, Philip, he can't talk to me like that. He said, Myers, he can, and he did. And guess what? We've all gotten those notes. And I remember just sitting back and going, I'll be damned. Okay. And it was like, oh, I was just deflated. I was just sitting here. I was ready and willing to do whatever they wanted me to do. And so we did. We finished studying. Eventually the duality thing went away and I quit trying to fight the deal and I just admitted that I didn't understand anything that was in the big book. And as we studied every Tuesday night and Thursday night, I began to piece together and we began to connect the dots of what was going on. And it was an amazing thing to see, guys. An amazing thing. The old deal is, I think AA is therapy and it's a deal where in the fellowship we just get together and we hold each other up and that's how we do this thing. Well, holding people together is part of the deal. Our common problem is a big thing. And we come into a room, none of us will ever remember the first time we walked into a room full of like-minded people. And we looked around the room and we went, wow, these guys understand. This singleness of purpose, this thing of being able to identify with where I'd been and what I did was huge in the deal. The problem was is that somewhere along the line, me and a whole bunch of others just like me had gotten hung up, twisted up, and locked down in the fellowship side of the deal and never ever ventured over into the program side of the deal. And so what happened was, meeting makers make it. We just go into a bunch of meetings and I'm at the end of this line going to all these meetings and some guy, I'm telling him one night how sick I'm getting and I'm just not doing well. And he said, Myers, you just need to go to some more meetings. And I went, thank you, Rick. Thank you. And I remember just walking outside and I slid down in the seat of that old Land Cruiser of mine. And I remember just, it's hotter than heck. And I remember just putting my head down on that steering wheel and I just wept like a baby. I just wept. I just didn't know. So you fast forward in, we're getting a load of big book and I'm starting to come together with this stuff and I'm starting to understand what this thing is all about. And they talked to me about a disease of three parts, of body, mind, and spirit. I don't understand the allergic reaction. We all understand the allergic reaction. And then they introduced the mental obsession. I don't understand anything about the mental obsession. Anything about it. And yet Bill Wilson spends, 40 some odd pages from the doctor's opinion all the way over to page 44 talking about one thing. What is it? Why is it you think he spent so much time in Fred's story and Jim's story and the Jaywalker and the rest of these deals? All of that stuff is illustrating the mental obsession. Why is it? Stone cold sober. Why is it that I still pick up a drink? Guys, let me tell you something. I'm a great stopper. We're all great stoppers. We're just better starters. I mean, therein lies the problem. I'm just keep starting again. You see? Once we understand this stuff, that's why. See, I never understood why Bill was spending so much time with all the illustrations because I didn't understand the mental obsession part of this deal. And driving the whole train is this spiritual malady part that they talk about on page 64. This spiritual malady, this feeling of being disconnected. And some of you guys have kids now that have never had a drink and you already see this in them. I bet you. I got one at home right now. I'm telling you right, she's 15 years old. She's never had a drink. And I can see this disconnectedness, this feeling of being less than anybody else around her. It's the most baffling thing in the world to see. And it drives this whole nonsense. This thing of this spiritual malady, this thing. Hey, how many of you guys have ever been in a room with 1,000 people and you still were so lonely you couldn't stand it? These are manifestations of a spiritual malady. This feeling that I am less than and disconnected from you and God and everybody that's around me. It's a painful, painful place to be. And for the alcoholic, it's the kiss of death because where do we go to get that feeling of ease and comfort? What connects to the dots? You guys, how many of you guys remember the first Coca-Cola you drank? Next to none of us. How many of you remember the first drink you drank? Almost all of us. Because for one important evening, I am connected and at one with the universe. I can talk to a girl. I'm not afraid of you. I can dance. People say, no, those drunks, they just party too much. Guys, this isn't about partying. This is about getting on even ground with the rest of the universe. I just want to be normal. And as a functioning alcoholic, that's what happens. And you know what, guys? If it still worked today, I'd still be doing that today. It worked great. Alcohol treated my alcoholism for 20 years perfectly. Perfectly. And then it stopped. I went from being able to drink a case of beer and you'd never know I had a drink. I could still work a full day's work and you'd never know I had anything. To drinking two beers and I'd turn around and walk into this wall. I'm an idiot. I mean, it, physically, it just stopped, you see? And there's the deal. Let's look at a couple things real quick. AA&R in our neck of the woods, North Texas. I can name you right now three groups in North Texas that will not let you bring a big book into the meeting. Will not let you bring it in there. They have guys that stand out in front of the meeting place like this, and if you get out of your car with a big book like this, they'll ask you to take it and put it back in your car. We don't need it. We're going to do something else, but it's not going to be big book. I can name you two groups in the general area where we are in Texas where they're charging money to hear Fifth Steps. Charging money. And there's always somebody that says, well, how much are they charging? Well, what kind of Fifth Step do you want? How good? That's it. I know. I understand. And I know some of you are going like, I don't understand why he's even mentioning any of this thing. Well, I tell you, I mention it because from my perspective, I don't know how broad your AA world is. I'm hoping that it's here and you're involved and everybody's feeling warm and fuzzy about the thing. But let me tell you something. From my perspective, I'm seeing different AA groups every weekend. I'm sitting in meetings all over the United States and now internationally over the last 4 years. Meetings that would blow you away. Meetings where you never hear mention of God or the steps in a meeting. Meeting where we just go. There's a group that just opened up in Boston. You know what the name of the group is? The Dump It Here group. Huh? What is this? I don't understand this. Why? And then everybody wants to get adamant and defend the whole thing instead of just looking at it. All I'm getting you... I'm a big one on asking questions. All I want you to do is ask yourself the question. Am I doing these things? Am I a part of this nightmare? Or am I a part of a solution? And if you're part of a solution, God bless you and I love you already. And there's a bunch of you old coots that have been around for a bunch of years that are in this room tonight. And you are my absolute heroes because you stayed and held the door for the rest of us knuckleheads to get here. And I am so very grateful that you did. Al-Anons, I've met some Al-Anons here tonight that I just worship already. Golly, I love that fellowship. I love everything about that deal. We just need to make sure that we're all on the common page, the common solution. Remember, the book talks about a common solution. And yet, when I walk into one group, I hear one thing. When I walk into another group, I hear something else. When I walk into another group, I hear something completely different. Now, I've been around a few years. I can make a determination. I'm not stupid. I can make a determination of what I'm going to take and what I'm going to leave. But what about the new man? What about my new friend over here in the hat that I just met tonight that's fairly new in this deal? What's he going to do when he walks into a goofy meeting and hears... I may have some out-of-body experience thinking about it. What's he going to do when he walks into a meeting for the third or fourth time hearing the same people talking about the same problems over and over and over again? I went to my old home group, the one I sobered up in about a year ago. And I walked in, I only knew two or three people out of that big old meeting that was there. And one of those ladies is sitting over there, and I'm talking to her a little bit, and so the meeting starts and we sit down. We get into the meeting, not 2 seconds into the meeting, she goes, well, I know the topic tonight is whatever it was, but I really need to talk about this job thing. And my eyes got like a deer in the headlight. I'm going, her name is Ruth. It's not Ruth, but it'll be tonight, Ruth. And she... After the meeting, she shares for 15 minutes about her inability to get this job thing worked out. 10 years ago, she was doing the same thing when I was sitting in those meetings. The same thing. I said, Ruth, let me ask you a question after the meeting. I've run my course with it, guys. I've just said, look, sweet pea, tell me why this is still happening. What does your sponsor say about all this? Well, you know how it is over here. I'm just changing sponsors. I've had several. Have you ever worked the work, Ruth? Well, in my own way, I have. I went, whoa, stop. Remember, Dr. Bob said there is no such thing as a personal interpretation of the big book. It's not there. It was written, it uses words like exact and precisely when you get into the book. That's what they're talking about, guys. They're wanting us to get... They gave us a specific set of directions guaranteed to bring about a specific outcome. And yet, we let people fester in our meetings and get sicker and sicker and sicker. And we let people think of things that they think are important, and we talk about those kind of things. At Primary Purpose, we call it the AA Trinity, the job, the girl, and the car. You know, I mean, stop and think about the guys that you work that coming out of treatment. You see them a week into treatment, and they're so pliable, they'll do anything. They need a handful of spiders. If you said this is going to get you sober, they'd do anything. And yet, let them go 27 days or 30 days. Let them do this. And then you go see them, and you're looking at a completely different guy. It's like some alien got him. All he cares about is the job, the girl, and the car. I need those three things to line up again. Guys, this is what kills me about our meetings. We propagate the idea that if we manage well, we can stay sober. Guys, that's not true, and you know it's not true. How many of you guys drank when you had a ton of money? You bet. How many of you guys drank when you were flat busted? Sure. How many of you guys drank when you had the best looking girl in this parish? When you had some beast on your arm? See? It doesn't make any difference, guys. This whole process, it's like herding cats. They never get lined up. You never get it all set up. Sorry. Forgive me. Stop that. Stop doing that. Listen to this. We're on the downhill slide, honest, guys. You guys say, I know, some of you guys are going, I didn't know I was going to get spanked tonight. I didn't. When I get back to Dallas, they'll say, Myers, how was it? Now, sometimes I'll say it was a spankathon, and sometimes I'll say it was fine. It was great. Usually it's great. The deal is that I've met enough people here already that know that some of you guys are already in the trenches doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. You're sponsoring guys, and there's a feeling of genuine solidity in the stuff that you're doing and the work you're doing. We do seem to have a common solution to what's going on, and this is good. Guys, let me tell you something. There are areas where you will never have anybody agree on what a meeting should be and what we're supposed to be doing. In Denmark, in Europe, in all the Scandinavian countries, they have what they call the German system. Yes, that's it. The German system. And the German system dictates that once you come in and sober up, you don't work any steps for 160 days. And at the end of 160 days, you get a sponsor, and then you begin working the work. Well, my book tells me on page 24, top of the page, that I won't be able to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the pain and suffering of ego a week or a month ago. This illusion, guys, I hear it all the time. If you forget your last drunk, you haven't had it yet. Guys, I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to remember it. Not with sufficient force. I've had some bad things happen to me in drunkenness, but they were not enough to keep me sober. Stop and think of the worst thing that ever happened to you when you were drinking or doing those other goofy outside issues. Stop and think what you did. And then stop and think what you were doing 10 hours later. The next day. If you're like me, most of us, we were drunk again. We were back looking for the ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. That's the scary part. Remembering it is not enough. Because the book tells me I got this mental obsession, this mental component of the disease that will not let me remember with sufficient force. And so I'm destined to repeat this over and over and over again. And it is sad. And it is maddening for you. And it is absolutely intolerable for your family. Unbelievable. It's a miracle that any of them stay with us because of that one component right there. That stupid mental obsession that causes us to do what normal people would never consider doing, you see? So look at this. If we know, or even if we suspect that something is amiss in our meetings, listen to what Bill Wilson wrote in a letter that he wrote in 1966. An AA group as such cannot take on all the personal problems of its members, let alone those of non-alcoholics in the world around us. The AA group is not, for example, a mediator of domestic relations, nor does it furnish personal financial aid to anyone. Although a member may sometimes be helped in such matters by his friends in AA, the primary responsibility for the solutions of all his problems of living and growing rests squarely upon the individual himself. Now, should an AA group attempt this sort of help, its effectiveness and energies would be hopelessly dissipated. Now, here it is. Heads up. This is why sobriety, freedom from alcohol through the teaching and practice of AA's 12 steps, is the sole purpose of the group. If we don't stick to this cardinal principle, we shall almost certainly collapse. And if we collapse, we cannot help anyone. You see, in 66, Bill Wilson could already see where the deal was sliding. He could already see us heading down a weird road. The grapevine decided to introduce the discussion meeting. Guys, let me tell you, if you listen to me talk for too long, you'll understand this. I think the open discussion meeting is the worst thing that ever happened to Alcoholics Anonymous. I do. I've seen groups. I do. Do I think and feel strongly that a man has to have a place or a woman has to have a place to go share? You bet I do. It's called a sponsor. It is. Go find that sponsor, hug his neck, and tell him how crappy your day went, or tell him how good your day went. But when the bell rings at the start of that meeting, we're there to help the new guy understand what the life-giving steps are about so that they too can have what you have. And this is why. Do I think that we could go to some discussion meetings and do some good? Yes. You bet. It's just gone too far, guys. It's just gone too far the other direction. We need to drag it back into perspective of what this thing is about. We need to get more studies and more literature-based meetings so that we understand what we're talking about, so that when we're sitting in that discussion meeting and we're sharing some stuff, we're in the book, that we're sharing that instead of opinion. All those years that I got sick in that other meeting like this, did any of those people mean me any malice? No. Those people loved me to death. It's just that collectively we had decided to put the big book aside as a solution to a problem and embrace something that we thought was more important, which was our opinion and ideas. And some of them were fun and some of them were pleasurable, but none of them had the power to really heal what ailed me. None of them had the ability to treat the internal condition that was alcoholism, the internal condition that was kicking my rear end. You see? There's a letter that I got from this guy. I want to read a little. It's just one little half paragraph. 2 years ago, we went to England and then went back again. And now there's got like 10 big book studies set up across Scotland and England as a direct result of those meetings. And these guys are flat ass on fire. They know the book and they love the book and they know exactly what they do with that book. We're going to go carry that message to somebody that needs some help. And they embraced it completely. After they started this meeting, this guy got this email or a voicemail on his cell phone from the intergroup office in London, and it said this: "My group, in accordance with intergroup discussions, will not be promoting your extreme cause. A few of my members have already had bad experience with your method and relapsed. Leave us alone and do your recovered program elsewhere." Guys, these cats weren't sacrificing cats in some back room. They weren't doing something whacked and weird. They were studying the big book. And it so unnerved the intergroup office there that they felt like they had to go ahead and write this stuff. Does that surprise you? Does that surprise you? It just blows me away to hear that. And we see this stuff. We see this all the time. How goofy things get and how little help is there. In meetings that we've seen now, there's 80 or 90 big book study groups that have patterned their meetings off the ones we do in Dallas. And watching the lives of those men, and I spend 2 hours every morning doing nothing but answering emails from these cats all over creation that are in the book, studying this stuff, and then watching what happens when they get out and go carry this message. It's an amazing thing, guys. Let's clarify something real quick. Why is this book thing so important? If we're getting along okay like it is, and let's say for the moment that we are, even though membership is declining, and even though less and less people are staying sober statistically, let's assume for this conversation that everything is okay. Why is it important to get in the book? It's important to get in the book because on any given night, my buddy over there in the hat that just walked in is going to walk into a meeting. And he's going to say, "Would you help me?" And you're going to make an excuse why you can't help him. You're going to dust his rear, or you're going to put him off, or you're going to tell him to read the big book and come see you in 6 months. Or you're going to... We do all kinds of goofy things because deep in the darkest part of the night, the question that I want you to ask yourself tonight, when you're laying in that bunk and you put out your last cigarette or drink your last glass of tea and you're sitting there all by yourself looking at the ceiling, I want you to ask yourself this question. For the next man that comes and asks me to help him, can I effectively carry this man through the work? Do I understand the big book enough to help him see with some clarity the life-saving work that's going to get him to God so God can fix what ails him? Can I do that? If you can, super. Get off your rear tomorrow and go find you a drunk to work with. If you can't, super too. Go find you somebody to help you through this work until you understand what the deal is. And I don't care whether you're 7 days sober, 7 years sober, or 70 years sober. I don't give a rat's patootie. I don't care. We got to stop with the arrogance and stuff that keeps us separate from the new guy that's coming in. If you don't understand it, say something. say, please help me with this work. There's tons of us here that will be delighted to do that, to carry you back through that. 2 short weeks later, there it is. You're fine. Everything is greased up and you're all ready to go do the deal. You see? And then we know that we're back in the common solution helping these guys, and the results is dramatic. Did you guys understand what I just said? The results will blow you away when you see this deal. I went from 7 years sober sponsoring 7 years dry to sponsoring nobody to sponsoring a whole ton of guys. And I'm telling you, it is the greatest joy in my life. Somebody told me one time, said, Myers, I'm just bored in AA. Bored? How can you be bored when you're watching miracles every day? How can you be bored? Click on my voicemail. You have 17 new messages. Oh! And so you weed through them. And I'm telling you, there is no boredom in sponsorship, guys. If you're bored, go get you some more cash to sponsor. You'll be blown away by what that whole prospect is like. Amazing stuff on this thing. Because all of you have your big books, turn... No. I'm just kidding. At the bottom, page 14. I want to talk about this step 12 stuff real quick, and then I'll wrap this thing up. My friend had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he did, as he had worked with me. A faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic failed to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed with us that is just like this. You've all read this. Now look, skip to the next paragraph, the next little line there. My wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problem. Guys, I know what it's like to be AA slick. I know what it's like to be sort of just coasting through a fellowship deal and not really helping anybody. I did it for years. I know exactly what it feels like. When I read this, my wife and I abandon ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping a drunk. How long has it been since you've been enthused about helping a drunk? Some of you are already there, and I know you are. I've already talked to you. Some of you have day by day put some distance between you and 12-step work, and you've come up with 1,000 excuses and reasons why you can't do that. You see this stuff all the time. We got a treatment place. We need some help on Friday night. And the guy comes up afterwards to the meal. He says, man, I really want to go with you, Myers. Man, I'm hip. I'm all about what you're doing, right? You're talking about this Friday, though, right? Yeah, this Friday. Well, I can't do it this Friday, but brother, I'll tell you what, next Friday for sure I'll be there. Yeah, super. See ya. I mean, maybe he will, maybe he won't. But I mean, it's just like somewhere along the line, we got hung up in the meeting makers make it stuff, and we forgot that Bill Wilson thought 12-step work was important enough that he wrote a whole chapter 7, to working with others. If you flip back over there to the book on 7 and look at the first thing, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. Look at page 60 at step 12 at the top of that, and then I'll get out of this book for a second. It kills me to do it. I don't even go to the bathroom without my big book. It's the dandiest thing in the world. I'm just lost without it. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles, blah, blah, blah. You know the rest of this. Now, stop and look at the first two lines of this again. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. What was the message we were trying to carry? That we'd had a spiritual experience as a result of doing the steps. That's what we're trying to tell these guys that are new. You could have a spiritual experience. We're not talking about relief here, guys. We're talking about being reborn. We're talking about a freedom that you've never known. And all it takes is simply working back through the work, doing what they said, have the spiritual experience. And then there's a little line way down at the bottom of page 132 where it says, why shouldn't we laugh? For we have recovered and been given the power to help others. Guys, left on my own devices, I'm a badly behaved alcoholic that does all kinds of stupid things and has no ability to carry a message to anybody. Let me submit to a simple program and do the work that they asked me to do, which started with a big A for action, and then see what happened. You see? It's an amazing thing. You want a new life? Work the work. Amazing stuff. I'm going to tell you a fast story and then we'll close this thing. Some of you guys have heard me talk about Terry before, and I tried to call Terry this week and see if I could track this guy down. He's in Montana someplace. I don't know. Terry was 21 or 22 years old when I met him at Homeward Bound, treatment place for indigents. And we've been going out there every Wednesday and every Friday for years and years and years. Terry shows up, and he's a basket case. He's absolutely the nastiest looking kid I've ever seen in my whole life. Bright red hair that sticks straight up in the sky. And he's been living on the street in Oak Cliff. Now, Oak Cliff is the hood. It's a tough part of Dallas. And he's been living on the street for some period of time. And he's sleeping in the back of an old busted up pickup on blocks between two buildings. And a gang comes by and grabs Terry by the ankles during the middle of the night and pulls him out on the street, and he's face down. And the first thing that hits the ground is his face, and it busts his nose and busts his lip and busts all of his teeth out. And he is. I mean, it's like you're. I'm doing my deal up there talking like this, and we're reading through the book and stuff. And I'm looking over there, and I'm going like this, and I'm just kind of looking around like this, going, "Oh man, I don't even want to look at that guy, much less." And so we do the meeting, and I'm finishing the meeting up just like this, looking over here. This kid scares me to death. And after the deal, we close hands, we're doing the Lord's Prayer, and I turn around, and there's Terry holding my hand. And I'm going, after the meeting, I go, rah, I drop the hand. Terry holds my hand. And he kind of looks at me, and he said, "Would you be my sponsor?" And I went, actually, I was going, "God, I don't understand." I was so mad. I was so mad because I only sponsor pretty people, and I don't. So we go through the work, and it's painful. Terry is not real bright, but he's doing okay. We get through it. We do his inventory, and it's an amazing thing to watch the transformation in this guy's face. It's just an amazing deal. And every day I see him, he's lovelier and lovelier and lovelier. He looks great. He's riding a bus from Oak Cliff down to our meeting, which is 20 miles away. Every meeting, he's there. Helps us clean up afterwards, setting up tables and stuff for 160 or so people. It's a big job. He gets back on a bus late at night if he can't get a ride back, and he rides the bus all the way back over like that. So one night in the Thursday night meeting, he says, "Myers, I need to borrow 10 or 15 bucks. I said, "Terry, you know I don't loan money to guys I sponsor." And he said, "I've loaned thousands. That's the reason I don't loan them anymore." So he says, I know. I need 10 bucks till Tuesday. Deal. Hand him a 10 bucks. He splits. I'm thinking he needs bus fare. Tuesday he walks in and he's got a white bucket, a squeegee, and he hands me a little business card. And it says T in something or another, window washing. And he used the money, the 10 bucks, to buy this squeegee. And he's staying out all day over in the rich part of Dallas washing these windows for these guys and making a living. And he finds him a little halfway house, and he's paying his way, and he's doing his deal and this kind of stuff. And buddy, I'm telling you, I'm flat blown away. Now, this guy knows the book, and he understands the book, and I'm clear on this thing. 4 months into this, less than that, maybe 3.5 months into this, he's got two guys he's sponsoring. Now, I'm watching him like a hawk. I'm just going like, "Okay, sure, right, call me if you have any trouble." I'm listening to him. I'm over his shoulder while he's helping these guys do the work. I'm telling you guys, he's so plugged in that it's scary. And since then, now I've seen 150 guys do exactly the same thing. But then it was new for me. And I watched this guy walk free and clear. And he calls me one day and he says, "Hey, I got my class, whatever it is, license so I can drive trucks again." And I'm going, "Oh, damn. I was hoping you wouldn't." Because I kind of like him. I want him to stay and be a part of the deal. But more than that, I just liked watching what was happening in his life. Now he's going to go on the road driving this long-haul truck, and he's going to set his squeegee aside, and I'm worried about him. So he leaves. I don't hear from him for a week and a half, 2 weeks, and I'm really worried about him. And he calls me one night about 10 o'clock at night, and I went, "Oh, shoot, here it is, the call." And he says, "Myers, I got this dilemma. I'm in this little town in Tennessee. I drop my load. There's nobody to offload it, and tomorrow, sometime during the day, they'll offload it, and I'll get out of here. But I was trying to find a meeting here tonight. They don't have a meeting in this town." I said, "Man, I'm sorry to hear that." And he said, "But you know, it's funny. I was at the coffee shop, and I was asking this waitress that was waiting on me if there was any meetings in the area. And she said, 'No.' She said, 'But we've been trying for a long time to start one.'" He said, "Myers, you think there's any chance I could start a..." And I said, "A meeting?" And he goes, "Yeah, a meeting." I went, "Hell, why not, Terry? Go ahead. Who am I to stand in the way of God's plan, man?" Let me tell you something. Terry Terry goes absolutely nuts. He does this meeting, and he's driving, and then on his return trip, he goes back through there. They have another meeting, and he gathered up some big books and stuff like this, and they got this thing going as a direct result of Terry's willingness to be there to help him get the thing started. And he's showing them the book, and he's saying, now stay in the book now. We're not getting bogged down in all this discussion stuff. Let's just stay in the book. And so, and it's just the funniest thing. Fast forward a couple of weeks. I hear from Terry sporadically, but not late, not in the last couple of days. And I get this call again. It's real late at night. Terry calls and says, "Hey, Myers, I'm in Maine." I said, "Maine, super." He said, "Guess what?" I said, "What?" He said, "This town doesn't have a big book meeting either." I bet that's not going to last for long. And he didn't. He started a big book study there in that town too. And it was just an amazing deal to watch this guy, the people that God was putting in his life to help as a direct result. Now, why do I tell you this story? It's a funny story. It's kind of nice. It still warms my heart telling it every time I tell it. But what's important to understand is that here's a drunk standing before you that's 7 years sober. I'm still not sponsoring anybody. And God knows I had no skills to start a group. Here's Terry, 4 or 5 months sober, sponsoring a dozen guys and starting these groups. You see, Terry understood what I'd been preaching all this time. He'd understood this stuff. That our job, our primary purpose, if you will, is to carry a message of recovery to a drunk that still suffers. And if you're in a remote location where you have meetings where no drunks walk in on you, guess what? You're destined to do some traveling. Get your group together and go find you a wind-up place and make it a group deal to go carry this message like this. It will blow you away. In our group, we have 32 meetings a week that our group conducts other places, other than the 3 meetings a week that we have. Members of our group are reaching thousands of people every week with a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and a clear-cut message to recovery. It's a heady thing to see and experience how many people do that. What's more heady is to watch how many of these people are walking free and clear of this deadly disease. Their little screwed up lives are no longer little and screwed up. They're huge. These guys are absolute AA giants. There's a bunch of them in Iceland tonight doing this deal. And it's an amazing thing to watch how many of us, once we got off our rear ends and realized that we could go carry a message someplace else, there's where we got the fellowship that we craved. There's where we built the big book studies. There's where we built the guys that we're sponsoring. We didn't wait for them to come into a group, you see. This thing is about perception, guys. It's about how we perceive everything. 7 or 8 years sober, I'm kneeling in this garden that I love dearly, picking worms off this tomato plant. This perfectly illustrates my deal about this perception deal. And I'm thinking the whole time I'm on my knees, in a couple of minutes I'm going to walk into the house and see that beast I'm married to. And I'm going to see those daughters that drive me to distraction. I'm going to go get up. I'm going to get up in the morning and go to a job I hate with a bunch of employees that I can't stand. And there is my life. And on Tuesday I'm going to go to a goofy meeting and talk to a bunch of fucked up drunks that I don't... You see what I'm saying? There is my life as the spiritual malady kicks me soundly. Now, fast forward a couple of years. I'm doing the things that Cliff Bishop asked me to do. I'm getting off my rear end and going to carry a message. I'm going to Sally. I'm going to the wind-up joints. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. Miracle of miracles. I'm back in the same garden, picking the same bugs off the same stinking tomato plants. Well, maybe another generation of tomato plants. Only this time I'm thinking, you know what? If I play this right, I can get back in that house in the next 20 minutes and be in the same room with the woman that I absolutely adore. And I'll be there to embrace those kids that I love so desperately and so mightily. You see? I get to get up at 4:30 in the morning and go to this job that I absolutely love with the best bunch of employees that God ever put under one roof. You see? Did any of these guys change? Did my wife change? Did those daughters change? Did they? No. I change, guys. My internal condition changed because I treated it daily by selflessly doing something for another drunk. You see? It was that simple. And at the end of a day, when I sit back and I know that today I have a purpose to be here, I have a reason to be alive on this earth, some would look at my life and say it's pathetic. I don't give a rat's patootie what you think about me. I'm telling you right now, I am crystal clear that my job is to carry a message of recovery to another drunk. And to watch the miracle in their lives. And watch those families reunite. And watch these guys walk out whole. come with us. We need you in the trenches, buddy. We sure need every one of you. Thanks again for asking me to come with us.
Thank you. Thank you, Myers. Wow.